He was a national treasure, but before that, he was a Milwaukee icon.
The pitch to Henry Aaron, a swing and a drive back into center field, going back towards the wall. It's back at that fence. And is it caught or not? It's a home run. The Braves are the champions of the National League.
It was a happy moment for me. It was a great moment for me. It was probably one of the happiest moments of my life.
Henry Aaron, certainly one of, if not the greatest baseball player of all time, began his illustrious Major League career here in Milwaukee in 1954 with the Braves. He was an instant star, making the first of his 21 All-Star Game appearances at County Stadium in just his second season, 1955.
I played in a great city like Milwaukee because of the fact that when I first started playing baseball in Milwaukee, I was a 19-year-old kid, and I made a lot of mistakes. I did a lot of foolish things, I'm talking about on the field, but I never once was booed in that city, and I think they set the tone for me in my career, because if I had been playing in New York City, where I made the same mistakes, they'd have booed me, I don't know what I would have done.
Henry Louis Aaron was born on February 5th, 1934, in Mobile, Alabama, one of eight children born to Herbert and Estella Aaron. Henry, an infielder by trade, was first signed to the Negro League's Indianapolis Clowns in 1951 at the age of 18. Aaron wasn't with the Clowns long before two teams, the Braves and the Giants, offered him a chance to play in the majors. Milwaukee's offer was better, by $50 a month. Playing 12 of the Braves' 13 years in Milwaukee made Aaron a local hero. And even though the team was gone, their affinity for Aaron never waned, even as he was chasing the great Babe Ruth for the all-time home run lead. It was during the offseason of 1973 and 74, with Aaron just one home run away from Ruth, where racism took over Aaron's world. Many bigoted white Ruth fans not wanting to see a black man hold sports' most sacred record.
It was the years was tough on me, but it was even tougher, I guess you would say, on the kids, you know, because they wasn't able to enjoy as much as they should have. But, you know, as they always said, good things come to those who wait.
But those wounds did take time to heal, as death threats would be sent to Aaron every single day. Still, undaunted, Aaron pressed ahead to his date with immortality, April 8th, 1974.
One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting, the outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone.
Following the 1974 season, an aging Aaron was traded back to Milwaukee, to the Brewers, where he played out the last 2 years of his career. Once he left the game as a player, he never looked back, aside from a mostly ceremonial front office position with Atlanta. He spent his final years not concerning himself with his own legacy.
I've been out of baseball since 76. I don't have time to worry about how votes are made, how people say, well, he's the greatest, he's not the greatest, he did this, he did that. At one point when I retired from baseball, I always felt a little bit angry at the way things were. But I think the older I got, the more I've just forgotten about it. And I say, hey, roll with the punches. Live with whatever's here, you know. And, I feel like I've been very fortunate.
Hank Aaron still holds the all-time record for runs batted in, extra base hits, total bases, and all-star games selected to. He was a three-time Gold Glove recipient and a two-time National League batting champion and still ranks in the top five in career hits, at-bats, and runs scored. Many still consider his 755 home runs baseball's legitimate home run record.
You mentioned all those stats. That's great. You know, that's individual. I think that a person has to go on and live his life after that is over with. And I just want to be remembered that someone that stood tall on the field and someone who stood tall off the field.
The great Henry Aaron, who began and ended his major league career in Milwaukee, died early Friday in his sleep at age 86. Welcome to a special edition of the Doug Russell Podcast, not one that I wanted to do. We'll still do a Packers podcast. It's just going to be released tomorrow instead of today on Friday because of this breaking news. It's been a tough week in Wisconsin sports. It began with the death of Bud Lee, the great Milwaukee Sentinel sports editor and columnist. It continued when Don Sutton, the former Brewers great, passed away. And granted, Don Sutton only spent parts of three seasons with the Brewers, but was so important to the 1982 team that won the American League championship. And then on Thursday, Actually, it was Wednesday night, but we found out on Thursday the death of former Packers general manager Ted Thompson, which certainly is something that we'll be talking about on the Saturday podcast leading into Sunday's NFC Championship game. But this is the biggest blow by far for someone like me, and I'm guessing so many of you who grew up just revering and I would stop short of saying worshiping for someone who was a mere mortal, but felt like someone who was so much more than that. Someone who endured so much and achieved so much and meant so much to so many. It's a tough day. There's no way of getting around that. This one affected me more than the others. Not that I knew Hank Aaron, because I didn't. And the only one of the four that I mentioned that I knew personally was Bud Lee. But Bud had been in failing health for a long time. Bud was in his 90s. Hank Aaron obviously was in his 80s. So it's not like it was shocking. The only death this week that shocked me, frankly, was Don Sutton's, because I did not know that he was ill. I knew that Ted Thompson was ill and had been in failing health for some time. Hank Aaron, again, 86 years old. Anytime you get into your 80s or 90s, like Bud Lee, who passed away, I think Bud was 92 or 93 when he died earlier this week. I mean, that's a good long life and a life well lived by all of those guys. But this is the one that hit me the hardest. And I think it was because it was so sudden. Just a week or two ago, we saw Hank Aaron getting his COVID-19 shot, and now it appears as though he passed away in his sleep due to a stroke. Former Brewers owner and former baseball commissioner Bud Selig, longtime friend of Hank Aaron, he told the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel's Tom Haudricourt earlier today, quote, "I'm absolutely heartbroken, heart sick. This is so devastating. I know some people may quarrel with it, but I've always said that he was the greatest player of our generation, but he was a better human being. I am so sad. When you think back to what he accomplished on the field, he was an even greater man off it. He was the same nice, wonderfully decent human being that he was when I first met him in 1958. Brewers Hall of Fame broadcaster Bob Uecker, he was born 10 days before Hank Aaron in 1934. They were teammates with the Milwaukee Braves in 1962 and 1963, again in Atlanta in 1967. They were very close friends as well. Again, reporting from the great Tom Haudricourt of the Journal Sentinel, quote, "This is a tough day, a really tough day. We were friends a long time. We were very close friends. We had a lot of great times together." And with Bob Uecker, I mean, this is someone that, again, like Bud Selig, they were lifelong friends, or almost what seemed like lifelong friends with Henry Aaron. And to so many Wisconsin sports fans, you felt like Hank Aaron really was one of us. He was originally from Mobile, Alabama. He lived out the bulk of his post-playing life in Atlanta. But he played 21 seasons for the Braves in Milwaukee and Atlanta after the team moved there in 1966, finished out his career with the Brewers starting in 1975, played two seasons with the Brewers. Hank Aaron first made it to the Braves in the spring of 1954 when then Braves left fielder Bobby Thompson broke his ankle sliding into second base. And you might see some pictures of Hank Aaron not wearing number 44, which became his signature for really his entire career. If you want to dazzle your friends at the bar, what was Hank Aaron's first major league uniform number? He wore number 5 during his rookie season in the majors before switching to number 44, which has become, you know, anytime you see 44, to me, that's always going to signify Hank Aaron. Like, if you're a Yankees fan, it might mean Reggie Jackson. Okay, that's fair. But whenever I see 44, to me, whether it's a basketball player, a football player, a hockey player, no matter what it is, when I see 44, I see Hank Aaron. The 1957 National League Most Valuable Player. He only won one MVP award, which is, to me, astonishing. But What made Aaron so great was his consistency. And, of course, 1957, the lone season that the city of Milwaukee won the World Series. But he had other great seasons as well. In 1963, he almost won the Triple Crown. Led the National League with 44, of course, home runs. Drove in 130, but he finished third with a .318 batting average. An incredible season. We all remember his most indelible moment. You heard it a couple of moments ago. April 14th, 1974, when Hank Aaron hit his 715th home run, beating the great Babe Ruth's longtime mark of 714. But that feat was made all the more impressive and all the more sad at the same time because of the death threats and hate mail from racist fans who didn't want a black man to have baseball's most sacred record, to have Babe Ruth's sacred record. Could you imagine getting death threats to yourself and your family sent to you every day for hitting home runs? Not for a political stance, not that that makes it really any better. Death threats are never acceptable. But getting death threats for hitting home runs. Can you imagine that? He was so much more, though, than a home run hitter when we're talking about his prowess on the field. Not only was he, and I still consider him to be, as so many do, still the home run king. He may not be the all-time home runs leader in Major League Baseball anymore because that has gone to Barry Bonds, but we all know what Barry Bonds was doing in that era when, you know, he hit 73 home runs in one season, for crying out loud. We all know that that is a manufactured statistic for Barry Bonds, and that's what's kept him out of the Hall of Fame all these years and will probably permanently keep him out of the Hall of Fame. So you can call him the home run king, even though he's technically second on the all-time home runs list, but he also set major league records with RBIs, total bases, and extra base hits. He's also the only player to hit at least 30 home runs in 15 seasons, that consistency that I was talking about, and is one of only four players to have at least 17 seasons with 150 or more hits. Right now, Hank Aaron is still third on the all-time hits list. If you took away all of his home runs, all 755 of his home runs, he'd still have more career hits than guys like Wade Boggs, which is incredible when you think about it. And think about this, though, too. In recent months, we've lost the likes of Lou Brock, Bob Gibson, Tom Seaver, Al Kaline, Whitey Ford, Joe Morgan, Phil Niekro. Just last week we lost, or I guess now 2 weeks ago, we lost Tommy Lasorda. It's been a bad run for some of the greats of baseball. Joining us now for an historical perspective on what Hank Aaron means to the state of Wisconsin. He's the filmmaker of two documentaries that touch on the life of Hank Aaron, one called Henry Aaron's Summer Up North, another called A Braves New World. He was also the author of the book Milwaukee Braves Heroes and Heartbreak. It's available on Amazon. You can find it at Barnes & Noble as well. William Pavletic joins me here on the Doug Russell Podcast. William, thank you so much for the time and the insights. Appreciate it very much. I want to begin here. Your documentary, Henry Aaron's Summer Up North, touches on the first time that Hank Aaron came to Wisconsin, not to play for the Braves, but rather the minor league Eau Claire Bears. What did you learn about the early days of Henry Aaron's career with that film specifically?
Well, what was so fascinating was in 1952, Henry Aaron was all of 18 years old. He grew up in a suburb of Mobile, Alabama, his whole life in the segregated South, dirt floor, and he played baseball in the sandlots. And he was recruited by the Indianapolis Clowns, which was at one point one of the star franchises of the Negro Leagues, but by 52 it was. The Negro Leagues at that point were already starting to fade and dissolve because Major League Baseball was integrating. Jackie Robinson had been playing for a while and a lot of the color lines had been broken. So by 1952, here's this 18-year-old kid who grew up in a very specific, isolated world in the Deep South. And he went to barnstorm with the Indianapolis Clowns. And then by mid-June, the owner of the Clowns, Sid Pollack, sold him to the Braves. And at that point, that's where the Negro Leagues were making their money. People weren't watching the games as much as some of the players were coming up through the Negro Leagues, and then the owners were selling them to the major league teams. So the Braves bought Hank's contract, and he became a member of the Braves farm system. And just the idea that, you know, at 18 years old, he went from the deep segregated South to a very whitewashed Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and pretty much, you know, showed up with a cardboard suitcase with almost everything he owned, and he came there with the one purpose: to play baseball.
How was he treated when he got to New York, this kid from the South that, as you explore in the documentary and you just said, you know, he comes to Lily White, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. It's a whole new world for him. How did it go for him?
Eau Claire at the time had two other black ball players, including Wes Covington, who eventually made it to the majors with Hank. But Eau Claire was as hospitable as it could be. Everybody was very welcoming and accommodating. He was a ball player, and the town of Eau Claire loved their Eau Claire Bears minor league baseball team, which was the equivalent of the A ball in the minor league system. It was, you know, like the entry level for minor league baseball. And when Henry Aaron landed in Eau Claire off the plane, the little puddle jumper, the local sports writer, Clell Buzzle, picked him up and drove him to the YMCA, because at the time, most of the ball players in Eau Claire stayed with host families, but the three black ball players stayed at the local YMCA. So that's where he stayed during his stay in Eau Claire. But everyone was very accommodating. It just, there weren't a lot of accommodations for a black ball player. Like if, you know, Hank had a favorite Southern dish that he enjoyed eating for dinner, or, you know, where would he get his hair cut, or if he wanted to pick out clothes that he was more accustomed to. Eau Claire didn't have a very heavy African-American population. So he was very much a stranger in a strange land. As friendly as everybody was, it was still very foreign.
In that same vein, and maybe this is asking a speculative question, so I apologize in advance, but do you think that his experience in Eau Claire helped inform him when he did get to Milwaukee about a black kid from the South now being in the North, being in Wisconsin, how to be away from home, how to still with the racial injustices, especially that were, I mean, they haven't gone away, obviously, but especially in the 1950s, as inflamed as racial prejudices were and the racial divide in this country was. Did that help him, do you think, at all that summer in Eau Claire when he got to Milwaukee two seasons later?
Absolutely. I think his experience in Eau Claire was very positive. He's always reflected very positively on his time in Eau Claire and felt it was very important in his nurturing and maturing as a ball player and as an adult. Hank Aaron was a fighter. He's a survivor. And he is, you know, the consummate gentleman. Everyone always would tell stories about how he would just quietly sit and watch and observe. You know, you get the impression that he was always processing. You know, he was like learning his way. He was learning. He was adapting. And all of those experiences in Eau Claire, which were mostly positive, you know, really conditioned him. So the next year when he went into Jackson, he went to Jacksonville the year after Eau Claire. And there, you know, he dealt with all of the Deep South stereotypes of the 50s. Prejudices, segregation, you know, had to stay at different hotels, depending on where he was going, you know, he could or couldn't travel with the team. And the things that were said to him from the stands or from fans, you know, it was a much different environment than Eau Claire. So when he was in Eau Claire, he learned all about Wisconsin hospitality and he learned to trust Wisconsin. I think that's where his love of Wisconsin probably began to blossom. And then when he came back to Milwaukee 2 years later after Bobby Thompson broke his ankle. That's where the love affair really caught its groove. And, you know, it was a lifelong relationship with the city and the state of Wisconsin.
I want to explore that a little bit, the love affair between Henry Aaron and the city of Milwaukee. The Milwaukee Braves were only in town, as everyone knows, for 13 years. To some, it seems like it was a lot longer than that, considering the success that the team had had. And I know that in both your book, Milwaukee Braves Heroes and Heartbreak, as well as your documentary, A Braves New World, you go into the business of what caused the Braves to leave. But it was really a love affair that this city had had. And there was no more front-facing star than Henry Aaron. I mean, look, we had Warren Spahn, you had Eddie Matthews. This was a great, great baseball team. But Hank Aaron, this young black kid from Mobile, Alabama, he was the face of this Milwaukee Braves team. How unusual was that for a young black man in the 1950s?
You know, in the mid-50s, pro football hadn't quite integrated as fast as baseball. Also, you know, the Packers were, you know, we're still a few years ahead of the Lombardi era, you know, where we fall in love with the Herb Adderleys and the Willie Woods and the Willie Davises. So he was the kind of ball player that just captured everybody's imagination. And being able to do that, he was able to break down a lot of barriers. Just looking at the social media tributes online today, he really seems to be the player that these grown adults now are really sad that their childhood hero has passed away, because Eddie Matthews and Warren Spahn were a little older. Whereas, you know, Hank Aaron, he was the every kid, where he's the 18-year-old kid living the dream. And, you know, as fans in the 50s, you got to watch him grow up. And probably the only parallel to that would be maybe Robin Yount with the Brewers in the 70s, how when he showed up on the scene, he was this bright-eyed 18-year-old full of potential, and he was a class act as well as Hank Aaron. Really embraced the city. The city embraced him. And, you know, both went on to have Hall of Fame careers.
I want to ask you a question about the makeup of the city of Milwaukee. I know you're in Los Angeles right now, but you grew up in Mequon, much like I grew up in Waukesha. We're about the same age. The city of Milwaukee, I think, respected Hank Aaron because he wasn't that flashy player. He was great, but he wasn't a headline grabber. He was hardworking. He was humble. He was consistent, and he was excellent. I don't know how many other cities that would have played to as well as it played to the crowd in Milwaukee, not only when he was with the Milwaukee Braves, but just as the Milwaukee Brewers were also trying to get their footing as a legitimate major league franchise in the mid-1970s, when his old friend, Bud Selig, who, you know, they've known each other since 1958, as Bud told Tom Haudecourt in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel right after the news of Henry Aaron's passing became known, Bud Selig convinced Henry Aaron to come to Milwaukee to just try to breathe some life into this Brewers franchise. And Hank Aaron had said that there would be no other place that he would want to end his career than where it started in Milwaukee. I think that's as much a tribute to Milwaukee as it was to Hank himself.
Absolutely. I mean, there's stories that when Sid Pollack of the Indianapolis Clowns was shopping Hank Aaron's contract around, the Giants were trying to purchase it. And just imagine Hank playing in the outfield next to Willie Mays, you know, at the Polo Grounds. Fortunately, fate stepped in and, you know, Hank ended up with the Braves. And like he has said numerous times, Milwaukee is where he deserved to be and where he belonged. Because I go back to, he's soft-spoken, you know, he absorbs, he adapts. He doesn't want to be the focus of, you know, the center of attention. And so Milwaukee is a blue-collar town. It's a Rust Belt town. It's a lunch pail town. You know, everybody shows up and they go to work. They're there to work. They're there to hustle. And Hank's everyday mantra really fit into that, where he let his bat do the talking. He let his glove do the talking. And, you know, I think that really helped cement his relationship with the city and the fans and vice versa. And the idea of him playing in a New York or playing in later Los Angeles, especially as a kid, he probably would have adapted, but it probably would have been a different relationship, you know. And then for him to mature in Milwaukee, So by the time the Braves moved to Atlanta, at that point, he's in his, you know, early 30s. He then can step up and really be an ambassador for the Braves and be an ambassador to baseball in the South. And that's where, you know, he really shined down there. I mean, when the Braves moved to Atlanta, they were the first major league team to move south of the Mason-Dixon line. And at that point, Hank Aaron was the face of the franchise. And he did tremendous things, both intangibles and intangibles, to have the South embrace Major League Baseball. And that's, you know, a tribute to his ability to adapt and, you know, really be that ambassador.
What statistic most impresses you? I mean, we have the 755 home runs. I look at all the hits, all the RBIs, all the extra base hits. You can roll all of that up. I look at the 25 All-Star games. 25 All-Star games that Hank Aaron was named to. That's incredible. I don't know what the statistic that sticks out in your mind the most is. For me, that might be the one that's it. I mean, he was so consistent for so long.
I think it was that he hit over 300 and never had more than 100 strikeouts in a season.
Yeah, that's an incredible one, too.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. You know, the way the game of baseball has evolved, you know, a lot of these players today are either hitting the ball over the fence or they're striking out. Hank was always making contact, which really spoke to him as a hitter. You know, he'll always be the home run king to me. But I think it's the fact that he would be more interested in being respected as an all-around ball player and also, you know, just always making contact because he had those big, thick wrists that, you know, could just snap on a ball.
I'd be remiss, Bill, if I let you go without at least asking for your remembrances of the late Bud Lee, who also passed away earlier this week. This has been an unprecedented week for the passing of Wisconsin sports icons, and you and I were talking about it before the interview began. I mean, Bud Lee, I hope doesn't get lost in history for what his incredible career was. We'll talk about Ted Thompson, Don Sutton passing away earlier this week as well. But I know that you had, as I did, a lot of interactions with Bud Lee over the years as well.
Yeah, Bud was, you know, he was the consummate storyteller. I had the pleasure of growing up reading the Sentinel as a kid and, you know, reading Bud's columns because by the 70s and 80s, he was, you know, newspaper royalty, as I like to call it, where, you know, he always had the great articles, he always had the great scoops, and he always had great insight. And when I went down the rabbit hole of researching my Milwaukee Braves book, at the time, he was the president of the Milwaukee Braves Historical Association, and I was able to connect with him. And from the moment I chatted with him on the phone, he was generous, he was kind, he invited me over to his house for coffee, and he showed me his library, which was, you know, collections of books and research materials, and he opened it all up for me. And, you know, I was expecting to be there an hour. I think I spent 4 hours just sitting in his den, and he was just telling me stories, everything Milwaukee Braves stories to, you know, obviously the Vince Lombardi Packer dynasty of the 60s, because he sat front and center for that. You know, he was a Green Bay kid. He grew up in Green Bay. But, you know, he was a true Wisconsinite through and through. And, you know, he's right up there with when it comes to, you know, the legends of Wisconsin sports writing. He's right up there with Art Daly and Lee Remmel and, you know, all of the great sports writers over the past 50, 60 years. And he will truly be missed.
Without a doubt, he will be. He was truly one of the greats, as was Henry Aaron. William, we appreciate the time so much. Thank you for your time and your insights very much.
Thanks for having me, Doug. It was a pleasure.
It was way back in 1999 that I had the opportunity to have a one-on-one conversation with the great man. As a lifelong fan and as a young journalist at the time, it was beyond nerve-wracking, to say the least. So I was nervous, very nervous. This is not my best interview, but it might be my favorite interview because I was speaking to someone I so deeply respected and someone who was a true American icon and a true American hero in every sense From 1999, this is my interview with the great Hank Aaron.
Sports Central continues here on 620 WTMJ. Doug Russell now joined by the greatest of all time, baseball's home run champion and the man who became synonymous with the number 44 here in Milwaukee, Henry Aaron. First of all, thanks for taking time out of your schedule this evening to join us.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
It's a big year here in Milwaukee with the opening of Miller Park coming next year, but something that I think might be overshadowed by the opening of the new ballpark is the closing of the old one in its place. You had so many great moments in. What are some of your thoughts on the closing of County Stadium?
Well, of course, it's going to be a sad moment for me, but I realize that Miller Park is going to offer a lot of things to the people of Wisconsin, especially the people of Milwaukee. I had some of my greatest years playing in County Stadium. In fact, participated in the World Series there, participated in my first All-Star game in County Stadium. So, you know, that was very fond memories of that ballpark. And I played my last major league game in that ballpark. So when they start tearing it down, I want to make sure I get me a seat so I can always remember that I got some attachment to it.
I'm going to play an audio bite for you, and I'm going to ask you to close your eyes and think back.
The pitch to Henry Aaron, a swing and a drive back into center field, going back towards the wall. It's back at that fence. And is it caught or not? It's a home run. The Braves are the champions of the National League.
Earl Gillespie on play-by-play. What memories do you think of when you think back to that day in 1957?
I think about we finally made it. You know, when I said we, I'm talking about the Milwaukee Braves, our team. Because the year before, we had blown a pennant to the Dodgers that we should have won. And this year, that year, we was beginning to struggle a little bit, and to hit a home run off Billy Muffet, who was one of the top relief pitchers, meant that our team was going to be in the World Series.
How often do you think about that?
I think about it quite a bit. It was a happy moment for me. It was a great moment for me. It was probably one of the happiest moments of my life.
Milwaukee lured the Boston Braves to town with a brand-new state-of-the-art ballpark. 13 years later, Atlanta did the same thing to the Milwaukee Braves. Now Fulton County Stadium is a parking lot, and Milwaukee County Stadium will soon be one as well. Can you see a day where Turner Field and Miller Park will actually be regarded as antiquated relics?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That happens. You know, just look at Cincinnati. Just look at the Astrodome. You know, these ballparks are eventually going to come along, and there's the state of the art going to come along, and somebody want to build a new ballpark, want something new. You know, it's always something, you know, and so that's one of the things I think that Commissioner Selig and Wendy Selig was concerned about, you know, trying to stay up with ballpark like Turner Field and some of these other ballparks that's going up across the country.
Let's talk about the game today. Do you think some of the innocence is lost in the game of baseball with all of the multi-million dollar contracts being doled out and the free agency that has allowed certain teams to flourish and other teams to perish?
Well, I think there's some concern about that. You know, some concern about it as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's the haves and the have-nots. And, of course, Milwaukee has gotten caught up in some of that. If you don't have teams that would pay rolls $60, $68 million, then you are one of the have-nots, you know, and I don't know that all of the teams are going to ever be able to compete like that. It has changed some of the thinking of some ball players. Ball players, I don't think, have to feel like they don't have to play as long or be dedicated to a team. You know, when you think about Ted Williams, you think about the Boston Red Sox. When you think about Stan Musial, you think about the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, not players just move from team to team. You know, you don't never know who's going to be where, you know. Reggie Jackson, I think, who's just been recently was put into the Hall of Fame, was on several, eight or nine different teams, you know. Same thing was true with Gaylord Perry, you know. So I think the Pledge of Allegiance, as far as players are concerned, is not there like it used to be, but that's the way the game is played today.
It's the 25th anniversary of your breaking Babe Ruth's home run record. Your ordeal has been well documented with the racial hatred that you had to endure. Can it be described in words what you and your family went through during the offseason of 1973 to 1974?
Well, it was the years that you just mentioned was tough on me. Not so much, it was tough on me, but it was even tougher, I guess you would say, on the kids, you know, because they wasn't able to enjoy as much as they should have. But, you know, as they always said, good things come to those who wait, you know. So that's over with, done with, and I've waited a long time, as you mentioned before. This is the 25th anniversary, and some good things have happened.
How have things gotten better for minorities in baseball the last 25 years?
I don't know. I think in some ways it has moved in some direction the way that we all anticipated, but it has been at a snail's pace, and that need to be picked up. You know, when I say a snail's pace, I mean it's just creaking along. And I think that we need to start thinking in terms of trying to do something on a wholesale basis. And I think that Commissioner Selig is beginning to. I think he understands that.
How much do you think things can still improve in your lifetime for minorities being put in positions of power in the game of baseball?
Well, I hope they can. You know, that's the same thing Jackie Robinson spoke about. You know, I would hope things would be put in place before during my lifetime, you know, that people start judging people for their character rather than their color. You know, I would hope that we would start looking at that, not only in baseball, but in all of life.
Last month, the Hank Aaron Award was introduced, recognizing the best all-around hitter in baseball, but many don't even recognize you as the greatest living player. Do you think you've gotten the recognition and respect you deserve, or is that still a sore spot for you?
It's not a sore spot for me. I don't have time to worry about it. As I mentioned before, you know, I am perfectly happy with my life now. You know, I've been out of baseball since 76. I don't have time to worry about how votes are made, how people say, well, he's the greatest, he's not the greatest, he did this, he did that. I, at one point when I retired from baseball, I always felt a little bit, I guess I was a little bit angry at the way things were, but I think the older I got, the more I've just forgotten about it, and I say, hey, roll with the punches. Live with whatever's here, you know. And, I feel like I've been very fortunate, you know, in some ways, regardless of what people may think, you know. I played in a great city like Milwaukee, and I bring that up, and I say that because of the fact that when I first started playing baseball in Milwaukee, I was a 19-year-old kid, and I made a lot of mistakes. I did a lot of foolish things, I'm talking about on the field, but I never once was booed in that city, and I think they set the tone for me in my career, because if I had been playing in New York City, where I made the same mistakes, they'd have booed me, I don't know what I would have done, you know. So I would say that I give a lot of that credit to my having my great career to the people of Wisconsin.
Do you think your home run record will fall in your lifetime?
It's a possibility. I think there's players that can do it. I don't know whether they want to sacrifice enough to do it, but I think they can do it.
Milwaukee, unfortunately, at least for us here in Milwaukee, wasn't the site of your 715th home run, but it was the site of your last home run, number 755. Last month, the ball was sold for $650,000 by the county stadium groundskeeper that caught it. Is there any sadness for you the way the ball was sold rather than going to the Hall of Fame?
Well, at least we got it back. I had a lot of sad things about that, you know, really, which I'd rather not talk about, but it's back where it belongs, and we are hoping that eventually it will be where it's supposed to be, and that's in Wisconsin, where people can still see it.
A sad note this week, Joe Adcock, your former teammate, passed away at the age of 71 and was really one of the unsung heroes of those great Braves teams of the late 1950s. What was your reaction when you heard of the news of Joe Adcock's passing?
No, I was saddened. Joe and I, as you mentioned, we were teammates. You know, he played on some championship ball clubs, and he was the only guy that ever hit a ball clear out of Ebbets Field, I mean, over the rooftop. He could hit a ball. They talk about how far McGuire can hit a ball. You know, I don't think that McGuire, anybody else could hit a ball any further than Joe Adcock could. You know, he had tremendous strength, and he was a great first baseman. You know, I mean, he wasn't a gold glove first baseman, but because of his size, but anything that he got to, he could catch. And his fielding was great. He did some great work for the Braves in the 50s, you know, and he was a great teammate. So I was saddened. You know, I know his wife very well, Joanne, who used to work with a physician there in Milwaukee. So I know the whole family. So, I was saddened by that. But, Joe Adcock had Alzheimer's, and I think she told me that pneumonia set in. And so it was just a sad moment for all of us. I talked to Ernie Johnson. It was sad for him. So I'm just thankful that I had a chance to know him.
How many of your teammates do you still keep in regular contact with?
Well, not many. You know, I know Wes Bond, Matthews, Ernie Johnson, of course, lives here in Milwaukee. I mean, in Atlanta. I know Johnny Logan. I talked to him the other night. So I stay in touch with the ones that I can talk to, you know.
The final stats bear mentioning. Not only are you the all-time leader in home runs, but runs batted in, total bases, and extra base hits. You're second all-time in at-bats and runs scored, and third in games played and base hits. Your place is one of the all-time greats, and to many, especially here in Milwaukee, as the greatest of all time is secure. But there's more to a man than statistics. What do you hope your legacy will be for future generations?
I guess, you know, you mentioned all those. The stats, that's great. You know, that's individual. I think that a person has to go on and live his life after that is over with. I am happy that I'm involved with my foundation, with Chasing a Dream. I've helped a lot of kids chase their dream. And I just want to be remembered that someone that stood tall at the on the field and someone who stood tall off the field.
About the Chasing the Dream Foundation, could you just explain a little bit to some of our listeners who may not know what it is and how someone could perhaps get involved?
It's a foundation that my wife and I started a few years ago to help children between the ages of 9 and 12. And that is to help them not only in whatever they want to do. For an example, if some kid wants to be a gymnastic, we will help him do that. Pianist, we will help him do that. Just to help him chase their dreams and financially help them secure it.
That's Henry Aaron. Thanks for your time. I understand we'll see you here in Milwaukee later this summer in July.
Sure will.
All right. We'll look forward to that, and thank you so much for your time. It was an honor.
Thank you.
My interview with the great Hank Aaron from 1999. I think you can probably tell I was more than a little bit nervous. Let's be honest, it was nerve-wracking, but I've always held that interview very close to my heart, and I knew at some point I was going to put it out on this podcast. I was hoping it wasn't going to be for a while, but unfortunately, Hank Aaron passed away on Friday morning, and all of baseball, and certainly all of Wisconsin, mourns. And again, a tough, tough week for sports fans in the state of Wisconsin. This was, I think, for most of us, the biggest blow. And certainly our condolences go out to Henry Aaron's family and friends, and also the family and friends of the others that were lost this week as well. Ted Thompson, who passed away on Wednesday night. We found out about that on Thursday. I'll have some remembrances of Ted Thompson coming up on our Saturday podcast, which will be also a preview of the NFC Championship game coming up on Sunday, but also the great Bud Lee, former Milwaukee Sentinel sports editor and columnist, someone who I grew up reading and someone who I kind of wanted to be. Look, I knew I was never going to be Hank Aaron. I think we all wanted to be Hank Aaron, but if I couldn't be Hank Aaron, could I be a sports writer? Could I work for Bob Lee as one of his writers? Well, I never got the opportunity to do that, but I was fortunate and blessed enough to get to know Bud Lee before he passed away. And just a sweet, generous, wonderful gentleman that left us. And look, he was 93 years old. I can't say that he left us too soon. But it feels and would always feel like he left us too soon, no matter how long he lived. But he lived a full, rich, wonderful life. And, of course, Don Sutton, who passed away at the age of 75. I did not know that Don Sutton had been ill, but apparently he had been battling cancer for a long time. And certainly our best wishes go out to Don Sutton's family and friends as well. Again, tough week. You know, a win on Sunday in the NFC Championship game is not going to come close to making up for any of it, but it is something that we're going to preview coming up on a special weekend edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. By the way, the Brewers have announced that they will wear the number 44 on their jersey sleeves throughout the upcoming 2021 season in tribute to Hank Aaron, and I think that's entirely 1,000% appropriate as well. And our certainly condolences go out to all of Hank Aaron's family and friends, many of them with the Milwaukee Brewers, because he came back to Milwaukee so many times in his post-playing career and always said, as you just heard a few minutes ago, always said just the most wonderful, generous things about our community as well. So that'll do it for this special edition, remembering the life and times of the great Hank Aaron, who passed away early Friday morning at the age of 86. Have a great Friday night into Saturday whenever you happen to listen to this. And we'll certainly talk if you are listening to this on Friday or Saturday. We'll have our next show, which will be our NFC Championship game preview and some remembrances of Ted Thompson as well. We'll talk to you then.